Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to create, gets the switch with Tristan Thompson. Modest trying to force his way in. Step
nice. Nice. Net. We got a good one. We got a good one.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Oh God, it was fun to watch that game and to see Matas Bezelis, to see the broadcast, for God's sake. It was it was great to watch the new channel and to see them see Stacy and Adam Amin is on assignment. He wasn't there, so Mark Schanowski was filling in for
Total
him.
Total pro, Mark Schanowski did always a terrific job on the Chicago Sports Network. First game of the preseason, first game on the new network, and it was cool to see. Takeaways. Modest Bezelis, that's where it starts for me.
Yeah, he was great.
The fact that he not only looked like he was unfazed.
Big energy,
big boost off the bench. Also,
played some defense.
Defensively, he had the big block, and he looked competent guarding Donovan Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if he's further along defensively than we thought, and if he is, how much he could help this team that is going to be defensively challenged, as we saw last night. Last night, the biggest things were Bezelis, the defensive challenges that lie ahead, and the three-point challenge that is something that remains. You've got a coach that wants to play up-tempo, and they had fast break points galore. I think 33 fast break points, great. But you also had three-point shooting that they want to shoot more threes. They got to hit more threes. It's one thing to shoot them.
Yeah.
It's another thing to make them.
No, I mean, clearly. Listen, this is a flawed team. This is a team that is taking a step back, and we know that there is a the possibility of trades coming later on. We understand that they are interested in protecting that top 10 pick, even if they don't admit it, and they won't admit it. But it is, I think, fair to wonder how the season will unfold, and you know, they got problems. There's no doubt about it. I just enjoyed that they did what they said they were going to do. They said they were going to be running the floor. They said they were going to, get. I loved that Josh Giddey played. It makes me feel like, oh, that maybe that was all a lot of hype about his
ruptured
damage.
Ligament.
Well,
his
ruptured ligament. It sounded like he was going to.
It sounded terrible.
And like even the idea, like, oh, I'll be back before the season starts. We have time.
It sounded ridiculous.
Yeah.
Minor surgery is what somebody else has.
Exactly.
And you wondered if that was the case.
No doubt about it.
But now it looks like he's back, and also he looked pretty good. Also, a small victory, a little thing that gets a little bit overlooked. Zach LaVine being back on the floor was something that, even though in 18 minutes he didn't look necessarily great shooting the ball yet, but it's early. And just the fact that he's back, just the fact that he's going to fit in somehow, and that he is the guy that, as you alluded to, likely to be dealt or at least shopped. He shot 3 for 8. He's 1 for 4 for three-point land. So he's going to be a little bit rusty. But the fact that he is back on the floor gives them a representative, pretty good starting five. If you look at Vooch and Patrick Williams and Zach and Kobe White, and then and Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey is the other starter, because the offense will run. Well, he's your point guard, correct? I mean, he's the distributor. He's the guy that everything will go through, and then he'll be able to see the floor, take advantage of some really good passing skills, and that is your starting five. They go small at times.
Yeah.
They still don't protect the rim, but in this day and age, is protecting the rim as important as protecting the three-point line? We'll wait and see. The Bulls are going to be a team that we're going to be wondering about their defense, I think, all season long.
I think we knew that going in. I feel like, when Alex Caruso was traded. He's your best defensive player. He's an impact defender, and you trade him, so it made sense that they'd have some issues with it. DeMar DeRozan is the clutch player at the end of games, and you know, I think we understand the change that the Bulls are making. In other words, yep. There will be more. There is, you know, I would be surprised if Fuchs finishes the year here. I would be surprised if Zach LaVine isn't traded at some point moving forward. I just think it's kind of fun to see them now with some younger guys opening up the floor a little bit. And I like the idea that Josh Giddey can play like Lonzo Ball played when the Bulls were kind of doing some good stuff for 30-something games.
I enjoyed Billy Donovan calling timeout 90 seconds into the season.
Well, that's
I enjoyed that.
That's totally on Mark. I mean, that's Billy, right? He's the guy that is the.
It was appropriate too because I think the Cavs jumped out to an 8-0 lead, and it was too much, and there was not defense was optional, essentially. And he called timeout. They come back. Io played well down the stretch. I want to ask you about a couple guys that we haven't mentioned and sometimes we overlook, but we saw them last night on the floor on the new network, on the Chicago Sports Network. That
was
cool.
It was fun.
So Julian Phillips, he played 26 minutes, 4-7 shooting, 9 points.
Yeah.
He's athletic. You see what the Bulls saw in drafting him. How much do you think he's going to be a factor this year?
Yeah, I think he'll play quite a bit. I think he'll play about that time frame. I think he's pretty good. I think he's a good player.
Dalen Terry, more or less in terms of minutes and Julian Phillips.
I was surprised that I liked his game. I'm not a big Dalen Terry guy.
Offensively still remains a work in progress,
but that game, he would look good defensively.
Defensively, he's an asset.
Yeah.
He can help you on the perimeter. Matis Buzelis.
Oh, I mean, listen, that's tons of
rotation
fun.
Player? Starter? Starter?
Maybe. I mean, he's not in the G League, if that helps.
I think that almost removed any doubts about that, didn't it?
That's
a ridiculous overreaction, but that was my first reaction.
Right.
Like we talked about him not knowing whether or not it was G League or end of the bench for the Bulls or in the rotation. He looked like he belongs, and he made that assertion quickly. I think that we heard Stacey coming into this. We got a good one, as he said. I think the Bulls got a good one. So I think Matis Buzelis is a guy in 21 minutes said, okay, I'm here, and I'm here to stay.
You know, what I like about him is that he's got some swag. He's got – there's a feeling with the guy. You get the sense that he really believes he belongs. And, you know, I like the idea that he went – to the G League, that he went to the Ignite, and that he wanted to play professional basketball as quickly as possible. And I get it, you know, that with his Lithuanian background, it makes sense. But there are so many opportunities. Like, what did he make? Like $50,000 or something? Mm-hmm. It's not even that. There are so many opportunities to get paid these days playing college basketball. He didn't go with the NIL. He didn't concentrate on trying to make some money. He wanted to start his professional career.
He wanted to work on his craft.
Yes.
And so it's almost like a basketball trade school. So he went to the G League instead of going to college, and good for him. And it looks like he is somebody to get excited about. Let me keep going.
Yeah.
A name that is familiar in Chicago, but not to maybe Bulls fans, and not certainly with the Bulls, Talen Horton Tucker, THT, 17 minutes, 4-for-11 shooting, 8 points. Do you see him fitting in the rotation? He's a guy that has some...
Yeah.
He has some NBA experience. He was surprisingly picked up very quietly. I don't think he was even on the preseason roster until training camp, but maybe until he showed something. Do you see him working in?
I didn't before watching him a little bit yesterday, and I don't know how that's going to work. I also saw, and this was reported somewhere yesterday, who's the kid from DePaul?
Freeman
Liberties?
Yeah. Freeman Liberty. Yeah.
Freeman Liberty is coming back from Turkey and is going to sign a deal with the Bulls and probably play G League. And then
Windy City Bulls?
Well, Windy City Bulls, he's apparently going to, I mean, probably a two-way contract, right? But this is a guy, And I don't know if he can make three-pointers, but I know he likes to take them.
That's the thing.
Mean, he's good.
Everybody likes to take three-pointers. I mean, he'll make them.
He'll take a lot of threes for you if you need that. But it was kind of interesting that he's apparently trying to get out of his deal in Turkey to come here.
Interesting. That's another name to keep in mind, yes. A name that's familiar to some Bulls fans. How about Chris Duarte? Speaking of three-point shooting, he played only 11 minutes last night. He's the guy that came to the Bulls in the DeMar DeRozan trade. DeMar DeRozan, you know, obviously in the sign-in trade because he's now with the Kings. Chris Duarte, guy who wants to space the floor. He's got some experience, had some success with the Pacers early in his career. Not that old. You see him in the mix.
You know, I think I see everyone in the mix until they're not in the mix anymore. And I think that what happens as you get closer to an NBA season is that you start shortening the rotation. And I don't see Billy playing more than nine guys, just based on having watched him as a head coach in the NBA. So I think it's fun to sit here and talk about everybody and what they're doing. But the reality is, you know who the guys are. And that's they're gonna shorten that rotation, and those are the guys who are gonna play. There could be, you know, is Batum gonna play? Is somebody? You don't know until you see what they're missing. Like if they have someone that can knock down a three, maybe they end up doing that more. I just think it's there's right now. It's just the start
of
the preseason.
It's one game in. I know, but it's fun to go through the list.
One preseason game in.
Let me ask you one more. One more name.
But let me just finish that idea.
Okay.
I think they're going to be fewer players than you imagine, but go ahead.
Jalen Smith, he's got to be in the rotation. He's got to be a big part of the equation. I don't know if he starts or not. I don't know if he comes off the bench, but he is somebody you paid for, and he has the versatility that you're seeking in your offense. He can maybe be a stretch five. I don't know what you call it, but he's a guy that will give you some length, he'll give you some athleticism, and he'll give you some shooting.
Especially because Vooch is not like a rim protector in the way that he plays. But I think they will open the season, and it will be Vooch and Zach LaVine will be in the starting lineup along with
Kobe,
with
Patrick Williams.
Kobe, Patrick Williams, and Josh Giddey.
Yes.
I think that's their five starters. And then there'll be four guys in rotation after that. And if Lonzo Ball ends up being a fifth guy, then Lonzo Ball ends up being a fifth guy.
Well, Lonzo Ball, I don't know if he'll be the fifth guy. I don't know where he stands.
If he's going to play, then maybe the rotation expands to 10.
Perhaps.
If he's going to play.
That's a big if, because as the headline in the Sun-Times reads this morning, blame COVID recovery for Ball's latest delay. So he didn't play last night. Even if he were fully healthy, I don't know that he would have been on track to be on the court. So now he's got a COVID delay, according to the Sun-Times, and we don't know where he is in terms of his ramp-up phase.
And I don't know where Dustin is in terms of how long you have to be out with COVID.
Well, I think Lonzo Ball, regardless of his conditioning, he is somebody.
You asked that question.
Can we go back to the question if we're going to play that game? So why?
We don't have to play that game.
What do you mean?
Well, go ahead. I'll let you defend yourself.
Okay, thanks. Since we're going to call people out, why in the question is it, are we surprised? If everybody knows that he had COVID, then why did we ask the question? I'm answering the question. Then why are we surprised he didn't play? If he has COVID, then of course he should not have played.
I don't think we knew.
But it said one person's reporting it. One.
Right.
One person, not the person that we go to for our Bulls news either. One person in the Sun-Times is reporting it. And he doesn't say that he has COVID. It says, what does it say? It says that he's recovering from COVID. Recovering from COVID. I mean, how long until this guy plays? Let's go while we're young.
I think that what I'm trying to say is that, fair point, regardless of that, if he were fully healthy, I think that anything you get out of Lonzo Ball in the preseason or even during the season is going to be bonus time.
Right.
And in the moment he steps on the floor, if he is even in the rotation, which I think is a long shot to expect,
I mean,
it's a medical marvel and medical history is being made.
Listen, he can't play back-to-backs. We know that, right? He can't do it because he's coming back from a complete rebuild of his knee. He hasn't played in 2.5 years. So you're absolutely right. If he gets on the floor, that's why I said I think Billy likes a 9-man rotation. I just think if he were added to that mix, then maybe he expands it to 10. because you can't play them every back-to-back.
Right? And whether it's out of necessity or whatever the case may
they're
be.
They're trying to do right by him.
The fact that they have not structured this roster to the point where they're reliant on him is smart.
Yeah. Oh,
you can't. You can't be reliant on somebody.
They were before, and much.
Well, they learned the hard way. Yeah. They learned the lesson because relying on him to come back was not wise, and they paid the price for that because of unfulfilled potential. Cost them a lot of money, and nobody wants to be on the floor more than Lonzo Ball wants to be on the floor. You feel terrible for him, actually.
And he's been taking part in both practice time and scrimmage time. He hasn't been going, entire practices, I don't believe, but he has been scrimmaging and practicing. So that I think he was on the floor over the weekend, wasn't he?
He was on the floor over the weekend practicing.
Yeah.
And I've talked to somebody yesterday who would be in a position to know this, and it's realistically, if he's ready by the season, that would be the realistic hope for that. And you wonder if he even is at that point in a position to be relied upon. It'll be spot minutes. It would be something that it's very difficult to envision him being in a position where the Bulls have to count on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, different rules and different teams, et cetera. Like if you were talking about Miami, they'd have like five or six guys that you never heard of that are, just sort of guys that might be able to hit a shot or might be able to do something or somebody heard about in a pickup game, and they find a role for them.
They would. That's the Heat way.
That's Heat culture. That's different than what you got going on here.
Although,
so, they've had a lot of these guys have been around here for a while, like the junior reporter in Paris who now is playing a role, albeit, Jalen Terry with a smaller role, but he played yesterday and we saw him.
Porter.
He was interviewing everyone when they went to Paris.
Oh, Jalen Terry?
That's what I said.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I said Jalen. Jalen Terry.
I think the only thing about the Lonzo Ball situation that, if you want to call it a bright spot out of a dark period, the emergence of Ayo Dosunmu was possible, I think, because Lonzo Ball was not available. And Ayo has become, as we saw last night, somebody it's easy to get excited about, his potential. He hit 2 3-pointers last night. Yeah. He played 16 minutes. He made a strong debut, and he looks like he's going to be positioned to, again, have a strong season. So his emergence has been possible because they had to fill those minutes. So I think it's an exciting start to the season. They come back and they beat the Cavs. It's only one game, but gave us a lot to think about.
312-644-6767. And I think ultimately this is just my reaction, my visceral reaction to that game was, wow, they're different. They're a lot different than they were.
They're different. Yeah, they do look different. That's good.
That made me happy.
You know what else is different? The baseball playoffs today, 4 games. Let's talk about that when we come back.
2 elimination games.
2 elimination games. A lot of Chicago connections to the teams that are still involved.
Mully and Hall on the Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bears.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We do indeed have some breaking news from London or Hertfordshire, wherever the Bears are meeting the media. Ryan Poles has been to the podium and has made an announcement.
Yes, he has. Jaquan Brisker is out Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Bears will be playing without their starting strong safety. Jaquan Brisker in concussion protocol, did not make the trip to London, and now has been ruled out by Ryan Poles. Elijah Hicks, presumed to be the backup, will go and likely start in place of Brisker. Maybe Jonathan Owens gets some more time. Maybe they split duties. But the Bears will be without one of their emotional leaders on defense, and the guy who is tied for the team lead in tackles.
Yeah, interesting. The other news out of this, if if that is news, is that Larry Borum is getting closer to his window. In other words, he's on injured reserve, but he's getting closer to coming back. And polls also said that Ryan Bates is getting healthier.
Yes, both guys could figure into the mix down the road. Doesn't sound like it will be Sunday. The Bears will, I suppose, go into their offensive huddle with Tevin Jenkins in the mix still. Didn't have any update on him.
No. Nope.
Bill Murray played well in his absence. The offensive line remains a work in progress.
And it's also good Kevin Warren got behind the podium, and Kevin Warren reiterates that that Chicago, still the focus, still the central focus, the downtown stadium for the new stadium, and the plan remains to begin construction in 2025. He also, according to Bigsy, said the Bears are keeping their eyes on federal interest rate changes and fluctuations in the price of steel.
The fluctuation in the price of steel. That's a new one.
That's new.
That's new. Not quite sure how that factors into building on the lakefront. Perhaps it's all related to the overall cost, which has been estimated at $4.7 billion. I think that's conservative. They're more likely to be near $6 billion. Also, Kevin Warren addressed the way he's trying to understand the impact of the new private equity NFL guidelines, how they'll work, and it'll take a couple months to study that. The idea being selling private equity in the team to get cash on hand to invest more of the McCaskey's money into any stadium project.
He said it didn't seem imminent.
Nor does the building on the lakefront to me. But that's just my opinion, fact mixed in with the facts that you just reported very well there on Breaking
Thank you,
News.
Buddy. And he also, he said they want shovels in the ground at some point in 2025. And he wants to, he still is eyeballing the lakefront.
God kissed the lakefront in Chicago. And I think that's a patch of land that he is obsessed with. He's driving this more than any other person involved in this project. We get that.
They got $2 billion to put into it. They just need $2.7 billion of your money.
They're going to need more of public subsidies. They're going to need more of
your
government help.
Taxpayers.
And I think that when you put it that way, I know which way we stand and where we stand on this. Because I think it's an easy position to take. But I think that eventually, it's hard to envision anything changing except for the Bears' stake in this. And I think the Bears will have to put in more of their own money if they are hell-bent on building on the lakefront. And that's even without factoring in the Friends of the Parks.
Eventual lawsuits.
It's going to be litigious.
Of course it will.
Definitely. And I don't care what the price of steel is. There will be lawyers. There will be lawyers. So
you know what would be hilarious? I'm not making fun of it, but if they eventually reject the idea of a lakefront stadium because of the price of steel, the steel got too expensive.
Well, that gives them an out, I suppose. I still think that they're looking at a situation where they own the land in Arlington Heights and they can build their own stadium there free of much of the government bureaucracy they would deal with and encounter in Chicago, the political landscape being what it is, and frankly, the socioeconomic situation what it is. I just don't think you have those kind of realities in Arlington Heights where you own that land. But this is he's the team president. They got him here for a reason. He believes that it's still priority one, and it's his job to make it happen now. I'm a little surprised. I'm a little surprised in this international platform that the team president has come out and still maintained that as that's their focus.
Yeah,
that's their chief primary focus is building on the South Lot.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit surprising, but I don't know if he has a timetable in mind, a time frame.
Construction in 2025.
Okay, but I'm saying I don't know when he's going to admit that that's not going to happen. He keeps talking about it. They had that press conference.
Let me ask you this.
Where they prayed over it.
Don't they have to have approval from Springfield downstate?
Yes. They would have to have some approval.
Haven't we heard from Chris Welch, the House Speaker? Haven't we heard from the governor himself, which called it a non-starter?
Yes.
So there are political heavyweights who have weighed in and basically said, I don't think so. There would not be that kind of commitment from a government standpoint to get the public subsidies that are necessary to build on the lakefront that remains the primary focus of the Chicago Bears Stadium project, according to the team president this morning in London.
Yeah, I think the problem is still the $2.7 billion.
Time is money.
That you are
time is money.
Looking for.
Every month you wait, every year that it takes is more money that this project will take, and the price keeps going up. $4.7 billion is a conservative estimate.
Yes.
It's going to be closer to $6 billion before it's over.
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, Arlington Heights, you could build some temporary stands there. You get some people. It'd be like the old days.
They just hijacked our baseball segment.
Yeah, I know. I know. But that's breaking news, and
it's
good stuff.
It is breaking news. It is.
And thank you, Big Z, for reporting some of that.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
Thanks to the fine folks here. We will get you audio from that. We are still searching for it at this point, but there are a lot of...
You can imagine how lofty the rhetoric was in talking to an international media contingent about how beautiful the lakefront in Chicago is and why that is the ideal place to build a football stadium and structure an edifice and all the big words that Kevin Warren will use. And you know what? He's exactly right. Everybody can nod their heads in agreement that the skyline and the proximity in Chicago, how beautiful and majestic the view is, all those things are true. At some point in time, though, you have to recognize or realize how you're going to pay for this and what you say. And that's when the rhetoric becomes less lofty and more practical.
Yes, I think that when you have been told to kiss my lakefront by various political figures, you've got to at some point understand that maybe
you got that wrong. God kissed the lakefront.
Downtown, you know, Chicago with that lakefront.
He's also been told to kiss my lakefront.
Maybe not quite in those terms.
But it seems like that's essentially, you know, go scratch.
He's not getting the message.
Yes.
He's not getting the message. This is an intelligent man.
I know.
He's an experienced, successful businessman. He's shrewd and savvy.
If you keep repeating it long enough, maybe.
What are we missing here?
Maybe they'll come around to your point of view.
Is there something we don't know? Is there something we don't know?
I mean, unless.
Could there be?
Could there be, like, photos somewhere?
No,
I don't know what you're implying.
No, I'm saying, could he have some agreements or some assurances that we're unaware of? That because Mully, it just doesn't seem like
how.
it's.
I don't see how, David. I don't
try to be a logical, rational thinker, to look at this in logical, rational ways.
Here's the thing: you want to do this, and you need public funding, and there's no appetite for it. So it would indicate that you're probably going to go back to where you started from. You got to kind of go back to that idea and try to figure out whatever the tax issue is out there that is preventing you. I don't know if you're getting shovels in the ground. I don't know what you can say or what you can do to convince them otherwise. Are you waiting to see how the election turns out? And how would that change anything? Would suddenly the election going one way or another, would that open up public funds?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I don't think so.
I don't understand.
We're dealing with largely, if you're referring to a national election, is not going to have that much impact on a local issue.
So what will have an impact? When
you want to know what the only thing we're not factoring in is if the Bears at some point in time up the ante themselves, and if they invest more of
their own money. So if they were to sell a piece of the franchise to bring in the money that then they could afford to.
But keep in mind.
But how much, David?
They can only do up to 10% right now.
Okay.
I think it's 10%. So you're talking about maybe $600 million.
So that is not.
It's not enough.
That's not the billion.
So you'd have to go back to.
Short. So you'd still. Let's say they came up with $700. We've got $2.7 billion of our own money we're putting into this. All we need from you is $2 billion. Will the answer change?
I don't envision the answer changing based on the rhetoric and based on the assurances that we've heard from people who are in positions, political power, powerful positions, governors, the governor, the chief of, that's the Speaker of the House. No, I don't envision it changing. It's frustrating. I feel flummoxed.
Yeah.
Because it's more the same.
Yeah. But again, like if you repeat the same thing often enough, will people then believe it's going to happen?
I think they're trying. They're testing that premise. They're trying to make that into existence. And I just don't know.
A lot of that going on in the world. Just feels like it's a lot.
Does Kevin Warren need a fact checker?
We're going to bring in Chris Chelios. We'll talk to Chris next. We can ask him about the Blackhawks season opener and what he saw in the NHL, generally speaking, and why would the fine folks in Utah not boo the commissioner? We'll talk to Chelly next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
One of the things I always look at coming home to the city is I always look for cranes in the air.
Chris Chelios. Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score! BetMGM ambassador. The king of sportsbooks.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Joining us now, BetMGM ambassador Chris Chelios. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? I got to be honest, though. Those 9 o'clock starts, I'm a little tired.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Not kidding.
Yeah, it's past our bedtime. I stayed up to watch the first period. I wasn't overly impressed. I got to be honest with you, Chris. And I tried to watch highlights when I got up. But I know there were a couple of empty net goals. But how many goals is this team going to be allowing this year? Because it seemed like the whole preseason they were allowing like 5 goals a game, and then you see the result. And I get it. Like I said, it's 3-2, and then you give up some empty netters. But, man, that's depressing.
Yeah, I mean, exhibition, you don't like to judge exhibition games, but they did give up 17 goals in the first 3 games. So that's obviously, last night watching it, if you only watched the first period, that was a tough one to watch. I think they had one shot on net and just came out flat. But, you know, the next 2 periods, they I think they outplayed them. Granted, you know, Utah's just trying to protect that one goal lead in the third. But when they get their chances, they got to score. But more importantly, you know, that second goal, that Smith turnover at the blue line against the Keller line, you just got to, you know, you have to play smart when you're not a team that, you know, a team that's a highly skilled team. And the turnovers, they've got to clean that up, and they got to clean it up early. It's important, you know, not to get behind the eight ball here and get off to a tough start. So I thought the biggest thing was the turnovers. You know, they're chasing a lot, turning the puck over a lot, and it just makes you tired, and then you don't have that gas at the end of the game to create offense.
What did you like about what you saw from the Hawks in the opener?
I like the D. Vlasic, I thought, played great. I think they switched him up. I took him and put him with Jones. I thought they were a pretty good pair. They still have to gap up their D, but I did like the player, their defenseman. Donato played hard, gritty, some physicality. I love when Connor Murphy drew that penalty, and they need more of that. Every team's looking for consistency, and managers looking for consistency from their players. And I think guys like Connor Murphy, Foligno, now he's the captain. He's got to lead by example. You got to go out there and create something. And when things aren't going good, like what Connor Murphy did, he took a run at Keller, their best player, ended up getting a power play off of that. Unfortunately, the Hawks' power play was terrible in that second period. But like I said, that's That's the one thing I found. If they could just have that consistency and compete a little harder every game, but those turnovers are going to kill you every game.
Chris, how long does it take a team that is a relatively new team? I mean, this is not the same group. It seems like there's more talent on this team, but how long does it take to kind of figure out what you're doing as a group?
Well, I got to buy into what Richardson, the way he's coaching. And again, he's defense first and then, you know, create offense off the other team's mistakes. So the veterans they added, they're all good two-way players. You know, Taylor Hall, that should help a bit. I thought he had a great game yesterday, had a lot of chances. But yeah, these veteran guys are going to have to show these young kids the way and play the right way. And hopefully that'll transition into some wins.
When you look at this Hawk team and you saw what Connor Bedard did over the weekend, he got a little feisty. He stuck up for himself. Then you saw the way the players rallied around him when he did. Now, Chelly, I don't think you want Connor Bedard being that kind of chippy because you want him to avoid any kind of altercation and stay out of harm's way. But what did that say to you about the way the team rallied around him and about the way that he's dealing with that frustration?
Well, absolutely. And even last night, you see he was slamming a stick down, and he expects a lot from himself, but he can't put that whole thing on his own shoulders. But, yeah, it's good. He's going to have to stand up for himself at some point, you know, when the team becomes competitive and guys start playing hard on him. I think of that goal that he set up last night, and Sergachev, who's one of the top D in the league, I think he just laid off him. He didn't want to hit him because he was Connor Bedard, quite honestly. So, but yeah, he's got some spunk to him, and he's a competitor. So, and there's guys there, you know, they're bringing Patty Maroon. Foligno's always going to be there to stick up for Connor, but that's not his job. But again, you have to do those things, and he's got to stand up for himself. And it was good to see him do it the other night.
So, Chris, the Bears are in London, and they've got an 8:30 a.m. start on Sunday. What do you like in that one? What do you think about them playing Jacksonville in London?
Well, I think I'm on a streak right now. I laid off of Indy. I was right on the Panthers. So I think this is a very winnable game. They've been there. I don't know when they traveled there, but that time thing won't really mean a lot other than to the Bears fans. That's going to be some early drinking. holy tripe. I don't know how they're going to start their tailgates. But, yeah, but I think the Bears are in good shape. You know, Caleb Williams, again, took that great touchdown pass. He made that. It was a beautiful pass and showed a little touch there. So, again, it seems like he's taking steps forward and the team's playing better around him. I love Kmet still. You know, he's the go-to guy when, you know, Williams doesn't have a pass or the first option's not there. So I'm going with the Bears for sure this game.
Charlie, I want to ask you this since it came out last week. The NHL Network ranked the players 1 through 50, I think, and Connor Bedard was 38. Do you think that's appropriate this second season? Is that too high, too low, or properly rated?
I think it's spot on. There's so many great players. And again, Connor's got it still last night again trying to do too much, and that'll come with time. And with when they surround him with some more talent and they get more competitive as a team. But he's still got to play the right way. He took some long shifts again, a couple turnovers. And again, you could see the frustration. I mean, knows. But those skilled players, a player like Connor, they don't see the game like we see the game. So that's what makes him an incredible player. He makes those plays and tries to thread the needle. And you know, and he's going to continue to do that. But at some point, you have to, you know, you've got to make better decisions, especially when you're out there against another team's top line, because it's going to end up in the back of your net if you don't play smart.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff, Chris. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is Chris Chelios. He likes the Bears again this week.
Yeah, he does. Of course he does.
Okay.
He's always going to lean that way. And
well,
now
he
laid a beatable
off
team.
When he beatable doesn't team. Like him, he lays off.
Jags are not coming in hot.
Oh, be careful. Be careful what you say. We'll find out. Dan Weidert will give us his pick. No, he won't.
No.
But we'll talk to Dan next. It's Mully and Hawk, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.